Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, is it great to be back with you? We are on a new platform today. I think they call it StreamYard in Boston. It's Monday, February 5th, February 15th, I should say, 2021, episode 288 of the Anik and Florian podcast, starring three-time UFC title challenger, multi-stripe Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, Kenny Florian. Good morning, sir. Nice flowers behind you, huh? Happy Valentine's Day.
Show my feminine side over here. Yeah, exactly. I am well, man. It's great to see you. Great card this weekend. I'm excited to talk about it.
So whose flowers are those before we get to headlines? You sound like you're in a little bit of a rush today.
I believe these are Clark's. These are okay. Not from me. This is from her dad. So, okay. Yeah.
So we had so much to get to, and UFC 258 delivered in a big way. Only 10 fights as it stood after losing one on fight day. We got 15 coming up on Saturday night, so a lot to get to today. We'll be joined by UFC welterweight contender Bilal Muhammad in about 40 minutes or so, and Ray Longo coming up in 10 minutes or whenever he gets impatient via text message. We'll see. I don't know if it's snowing. We might not even have Ray today. But let us get to headlines, and let us get to a guy who – I don't know, probably sealed up the UFC Hall of Fame jacket over the weekend, Ken Flo, the now three-time defending UFC welterweight champion, Kamaru Usman, disposes of Gilbert Burns there in round three, and just a great performance, and it really had it all. You know, as you said on your YouTube channel, it had a momentum swing early, but Gilbert Burns, to his words, says he got overexcited, not to take away from Kamaru Usman, but that's the way Dorinho saw it. How did you see it?
Yeah, definitely. I think he did get a little bit emotional, but he got emotional because Kamaru Usman started getting back into the fight, and Kamaru Usman was not going away. There were times where Gilbert was landing some great shots. He was utilizing way more versatility, and I think that once he started catching him with his hands and hurting him with his hands, he kind of decided to make it a boxing fight, and that's where he allowed Kamaru Usman back into the fight. And you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, you got to credit Trevor Whitman here. And absolutely, you know, he was telling him to use the jab. And Kamaru certainly did that. The other thing is, you know, physically, he just looked way larger than Gilbert. And he utilized that, what, 6-inch reach advantage? Well, maybe 4 or 5-inch reach advantage that he had, which was brilliant. Utilizing that jab, it prevented Gilbert from coming in and was really frustrating him and hurting Gilbert. You know, I think it pretty much comes down to Kamaru made the adjustments and Gilbert didn't.
Right. So in terms of the jab as a singular weapon, and I got to love the MMA fan base, harkening back to Ken Flo against Takanori Gomi, I think in 2010, goddamn piston coming out of the Dover, Massachusetts native. But Ken Flo, you prided yourself on having a good jab. So what can you tell us further, I guess, on Kamaru Usman's use of the jab as really like a fight-ending weapon in this fight?
Right. You know, you could use a knife, you could use a sword, you know, or you can use kind of like a jabbing device. One of those, I can't even think of the damn thing, like a long spike. And that's what he was doing. almost like a lance to keep Gilbert on the outside. Yeah. Every time Gilbert was looking to try to get on the inside, he was running into that jab of Kamaru Usman. So it prevented the offense from Gilbert Burns to materialize, and it also set up the offense from Kamaru Usman as well. So I think that for Gilbert, he didn't understand how to get off the center line. He didn't understand that he should probably utilize his longer range weapon, which was his kicks. He was using it great early on, but Kamaru Usman was also coming forward and utilizing that jab great offensively. So both on the offensive and defensive side, Kamaru Usman was doing a great job of just keeping Gilbert off balance and backing him up. And, you know, Gilbert's great when he comes forward, but he's not great moving backwards. And he's not a great counter striker at this point in his career. So I think that it kind of exposed Gilbert a little bit in that regard. And obviously he's made such great progress with his striking. But, you know, being a competent and dangerous counter striker takes way more time. And I think Kamaru Usman and Trevor Whitman did a great job of backing him up and making him a more defensive fighter.
There are a lot of things we can talk about when it comes to Kamaru Usman's greatness, and we'll try to do it in an efficient manner. But it's 13-0 in the UFC. No welterweight has done that. He breaks George St. Pierre's record for the longest welterweight winning streak in UFC history, and he does it in his third championship defense. So it stands to reason that that despite the fact that he has more title defenses to get to George St. Pierre and get to double digits, this is a big, big deal, and it shouldn't be understated. But the mental fortitude, the locker room bump, you know, when we're showing Kamaru Usman in the locker room right before the main event, I said he has a lot of qualities of these special professional athletes, and he really does invoke Michael Jordan and LeBron James for me. Some of these guys who, Kobe Bryant especially, they just have this next level mentally, this undeniable motivation, this ability to channel anything into motivation. And I don't know, man, I don't know how you can quantify it in a mixed martial arts setting, but he's been saying repeatedly that he's like the best at this mental stuff, and certainly appears to be.
Absolutely. That FU energy, right? It's kind of right. Like, yeah. You know, he was facing a guy who he was friends with. He was facing a training partner. He was facing a guy who had helped him prepare for many fights. That stuff can get to you. I thought it was not a good sign in a lot of ways for Gilbert, and I thought it was a great sign for Kamaru Usman when they went to the center of the octagon and they went to shake hands, except Kamaru Usman was not there to shake hands. That's right. He was there to fight, and I think that said a lot for me to start that fight. I said, this guy's here to destroy. He's not here to make friends. He's not here to rekindle this relationship here with Gilbert Burns. Right. And you'd see it after the fight. It's like he was almost pissed that he had to beat him up. And he was like, this is what I do. And anyone who comes in here, I'm going to not beat. I'm going to try to destroy you.
Right. And Kamaru ain't trying to rekindle the friendship.
Right.
He's probably going to have to fight him again. And those are Kamaru's words, not mine. He acknowledged as much on social media. But that was my biggest takeaway, at least as far as the friendship and the relationship was concerned, that this was pre-fight, that Gilbert was going to be more than willing to bury the hatchet quickly. And Kamaru was sort of saying, I guess he was more of an acquaintance than a friend. I mean, Kamaru Usman is a cold-blooded assassin, Ken Flo. I mean, I don't know how to properly put it into words. Maybe it's fatigue for me, but dude, like, he is a real problem. And I don't even know that he was all that hurt early on in this fight, if I'm being honest, Kenny. He posted twice, you know, like it caught him in a good location. But man, I mean, the chin obviously against Colby Covington was tested in a big way. I'm blown away by Kamaru Usman. Like, I'm getting anxious again just talking about it today.
The UFC stands for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, not the Ultimate Friend Championship. And, you know, yeah, for Kamaru Usman, he's like, dude, you know, is it going to be me or you? And you better believe it's always going to be you with Kamaru Usman. He's there to beat you up, and he's got this chip on his shoulder, which I think is really propelling him to new heights. I mean, you know, I think a lot about Khabib Nurmagomedov and what he did over the course of his career. And of course, he's undefeated inside and outside of the UFC. But, you know, when you're talking about what your second fight in the UFC, which, you know, Anderson Silva had experienced that early on, Jose Aldo had experienced it early on, and then went on to these insane win streaks. I think you can pretty much erase that second loss for Kamaru Usman as he was really just learning the game. But to think about what he's doing in the UFC with his wrestling and now with his striking, it's extremely impressive. He has that killer mindset. This is a guy who's going to be very difficult to beat. I don't think you're going to be taking his belt easily if it does happen. And this is a guy who we've seen the maturity of Kamaru Usman, and we've seen him come into his own, and he is certainly doing that and just beasting it out there.
And seemed like for him, it was more of an emotional challenge to fight someone like Gilbert Burns than to fight somebody that he had real venom for in Colby Covington. Ken Flo's one of the nicest guys in MMA, so I don't know that there's anyone that you ever hated, but I would sort of turn it on you and say, would you rather fight a guy that you hated or fight Ryan Hall? And I think you'd probably rather fight a guy that you couldn't stand than have to fight a teammate, right?
No, for sure. I think so. You know, listen, I think about my first fight, my first official fight in the UFC against Diego Sanchez, a guy that I had trained with a lot and, you know, I learned to like. And I think that that's always a difficult thing, especially, you know, early on in my career. I think, you know, that was a moment that I really learned a lot from. There are no friends out there, and there's certainly no friends once you get into the octagon, and you never know who you're going to face. So some guy who's trying to be buddy-buddy with you in your weight class or just outside of your weight class, be very careful. If you're a pro fighter, be very careful.
Right. All right. Poll question for today's Anik and Florian podcast. Over 10,000 votes came in, and we appreciate all the back and forth. And again, when we do these poll questions, folks, I love you, but they only give you four slots. So we're doing the best we can. We always try to qualify it in the actual question that says, if your choice is not here, kindly leave it below. A lot of angry people out there. If you had to pick one active welterweight to beat Kamaru Usman to save a hamster's life, who has the best chance to do it? So, top five choices essentially were Colby Covington, Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, Gilbert Burns, four guys that Kamaru Usman has fought, by the way, and the one guy he hasn't fought, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So I can certainly understand the appeal for Wonderboy as the lone guy that he hasn't fought and ubiquitously regarded as a top five UFC striker of all time. But 52.7% of us believe that if they had to try to save this animal's life, they're sending Colby Covington in there. And 52.7% for Covington, 18.6% Leon Edwards, 18% for Jorge Masvidal, and 10.8% for Gilbert Durinho Burns. Wonderboy was not a part of the vote. I am sorry. So Colby Covington, right? Competitive fight at UFC 245 back in 2019. Ken Flo, your hamster is in its cage. Its life is on the line. Who are you sending in there against Kamaru Usman?
Right. Listen, I think that Colby Covington is probably a couple adjustments away from winning that fight. He definitely could have done that. He has the wrestling background to essentially force Covington into a striking battle. And I feel like, you know, to force Usman into a striking battle. And I feel like, you know, he could have done a lot better striking wise and could have made some better decisions out there against Usman. You know, I kind of do like that outlier choice in Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I don't think he has here's the problem. I don't think he has the wrestling necessarily to stop Usman if he's able to get to a clinch. I think it would potentially end quickly. But on the feet, I think he's one of the few guys who could actually knock out Usman. Also has the footwork to move around the octagon to frustrate Usman. So it's between those two guys. I didn't give you one straight answer, but...
Right. It's hard. It's hard because, you know, in the past, I'll say to save a dog's life, you know, but like you also can invoke the betting line here. Right. Because I can assuredly tell you that a betting line between Usman and Covington right now is going to be closer than a betting line between Usman and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So all of a sudden, when dogs' lives are on the line, right, it's like, man, I got to send in the guy who I absolutely think has the best chance to beat this guy. And I'm not going to give you an answer necessarily because I'm calling the fight, but I can understand why, based on the film, Colby Covington landed a ton of fights that would have put lesser welterweights away in that fight against Kamaru.
Which is why I think your question is important, right? It's like there's a life on the line here, be it a hamster
That's
or a
right.
dog.
That's right.
But it's true. Like if you have to make a choice, you need to be able to shut down Usman's wrestling, right? Because if he takes you down, you're done. Now, that's why I thought Gilbert had a good chance, because and you saw that. He didn't want to go to the ground with Gilbert, not on Gilbert's terms anyway. He stayed, and this was so smart from Kamaru Usman. He was staying on the outside, kind of grabbing the legs and just kicking him. But in no way, shape, or form did he engage in any connection for a grappling. Oh, decided to kind of pounce on him. But yeah, I think it's got to be a guy who can stop the wrestling, and Colby Covington is that guy, John.
Division is absolutely fascinating. Leon Edwards is going to get a big fight here, and hopefully for his sake, he gets it on March 13th. That fight has appeal for people, I think, and me especially, because their first meeting happened so long ago. It was Kamaru Usman's second UFC fight, and right. Leon Edwards has not lost a fight since. Jorge Gamebred Masvidal with a full training camp obviously is appetizing for a lot of people. I can understand that, and I do believe Gamebred, you know, with some better circumstances, could give Kamaru Usman a more competitive fight. And then I think Gilbert Burns, having made some of the adjustments that that you've talked about, welterweight division's in a great form right now. Another question, Ken Flo, and we have to get to Ray Longo here, but does Kamaru Usman have this double champ appetite that everybody else has right now? Yeah. Because this is the era of the simultaneous champion, and I don't think he's going to fight his fellow Nigerian Israel Adesanya necessarily, right? And that's
Right. Well, here's the thing. I was just about to bring that up. You know, I think he has immense respect for Israel Adesanya. And of course, given their background, Nigerian background, I think they love the idea of them kind of dominating their respective weight classes. However, you know, given the circumstances around Gilbert Burns, you know, maybe Kamaru is that guy who was like, yeah, it's cool, but I will fight you if it means a lot of money's on the line. And it means, you know, having one of the best legacies in UFC history. Yeah. And I'm sure I would say probably the same for Israel Adesanya. Now, you know, that remains to be seen. I think that is interesting. It could happen in the future. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so many great fights out there. And as both of these guys essentially get to the end of their feeding cycles, with both right. of them yeah, kind of destroying everybody yeah. in their division, maybe we do see it. Who knows?
See, I think welterweight is just the perfect weight class for Kamaru. Right. I mean, yes, he did win a Division II national champion at 174 pounds, and the weight cut is hard. Right. His mental fortitude makes it probably easier than it would be for most. But I don't think he wants to fight his good friend Israel Adesanya. I really right. don't. I believe right. that the Masvidal fight has obvious appeal monetarily and otherwise. But I believe that part of the reason you don't hear him calling out the middleweight champion is because he doesn't like to sort of, you know, cross that line the way he was forced to do so against Gilbert Burns. And I feel like if, you know, somebody else was middleweight champion right now, that might have been his focus after this win.
Absolutely. And everyone's different, right? I mean, if you think about, you know, long-term legacy and all that stuff, you know, you stay within your weight class. If you are kicking ass in that weight class and you can end your career there, why not? You know, maybe at the very end, after you've, you know, absolutely cleaned out the division, and you know, you maybe have lost a little bit of motivation, and there's one other challenge out there, and you say, I can maybe end my career being a double champ, then maybe,
yeah,
class, and destroying everyone in his path.
All right, well, Ray Longo, we delayed him about 4 minutes, so we'll see the extent to which he is bothered. Let's get to the Ray Longo man.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
The great Raymond Peter Longo now joins us live from Garden City, New York. That is not a Make America Great Again hat. It is a St. John's University hat signed by Lou Carnesecca. How about it, Ray?
Guy is an icon at St. John's. Yeah, but what a guy, still going strong.
He is.
95 years old. Unbelievable guy. Another guy who loves what he does or did, and he still has a passion for basketball. And in your 90s, when you have a passion for anything, I say that's awesome. A home run, Kenny. But I want to say a big thank you to my good friend. He's the assistant AD over there, Nick Vendikos. So a great guy, student, just a good guy, man. But thank you very much, buddy. What are you smirking about?
I just love hearing you say names of all kinds. I mean, we're bringing back the pronunciation of the week, and it's going to be you. We're going to give you a UFC fighter's name on a piece of paper, and you're going to try to say it. He just sounds so good.
Yeah, he's an Italian. I probably pronounced his name wrong.
Part of the reason why we went to you back in 2015 before episode one and asked you to be the coach that we would feature weekly on our podcast almost 6 years ago, it's crazy, is because of that voice, man. I mean, I could listen to your voice all day long. It should be my voicemail. Like, hi, you've reached John Anik. This is Ray Longo, though. I'm serious. No, I'm serious.
It's true.
I didn't butter him up on the show enough last week, so we're going to start there this week.
Let's do it. What do we got, man?
Oh, we got a lot of stuff. Your boy's still hashtagging everything Carolina Chris, but we're not going to talk about that. Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns, you know, thrill versus agony. We talked a lot about Kamaru Usman, but I wanted to start with you on Gilbert Burns because he put in the training camp of a lifetime and his emotions are just pouring out after the fight because I think in his mind, he did get overexcited. In his mind, he compared himself to Cody Garbrandt, just getting a little bit overzealous. But I think he knows the hard work it's going to take to not only get back to that fight, but to figure out the recipe to beat this guy at welterweight because he's probably not making 55. So I just think it was hard for Gilbert Burns to realize, like, man, it's going to take a lot of work to get back to this point in time.
Man, I got a different take on that. I agree with you, though, for sure. What you said is 100% true. But I just think it was the emotion of fighting a guy that was your friend and you're put in a position to do something that under probably any other circumstance you wouldn't do, you know, but you have no choice. You want to be the champion. Your best friend is the champion. You trained together for years. That stuff is rough, man. I could tell you as a coach, and my heart goes out to Henry because, you know, look at what happened. One guy left the gym, whether he was going to leave or he wasn't going to leave. That's tough, man. And, you know, Henry didn't even work the corner. You know what I mean? So that's
right.
He's telling you, man, I want, you know, made a best man win. He did the right thing, I believe.
Yeah. But if he was a chief strategist type of coach, yeah, Henry probably would have worked the corner, but maybe not. I hear what you're saying, and I don't need to spin it to Kenny and necessarily ask you, Kenny, what do you think the emotion was all about? But my read on the situation, Kenny, is that Gilbert Burns wants to be a UFC champion as bad as anybody that I've ever seen. And I think this is just going to be really a hard couple of weeks for him because of that more than anything else.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, listen, experience matters. And, you know, what people don't really talk about is all the extra interviews and all the extra media and all the extra attention that is on you when you're, you know, okay, main event's one thing. When you're fighting for the world championship belt, it's a whole different level. And it's super important that you keep your perspective and understand that. Is it a big fight? Sure. Is it just another fight, though? Yes. And, you know, don't get it twisted and almost don't let other people's perspectives and questions get to you. You got to stay focused on the task at hand and just be focused on what's in front of you. And that sounds so easy to do. But when people are asking all these questions and giving all these other angles and what do you think about this and are you nervous and how did you prepare for this? And you can overcomplicate things, especially for guys who like to think a lot. So and again, being in that situation for the first time, not everybody responds well. And I think he got overly excited, too, because he did have his moments in that first round. I thought he won that first round. He was hurting Kamaru. And then once Kamaru started coming back and maybe he started getting a little frustrated and tired, I think that affected things as well.
Yeah, and let me just say, like, I put out a tweet that night that said, don't ever mistake gym sparring for fighting. You know what I mean? And
absolutely.
Look, I always go to the mental side of things, John. Like, even look, so the other guy leaves the gym. Maybe he's got friends in the gym. They don't want to work for Gilbert. There's a mental toll that's taken somewhere. It's not just clean. Everybody goes back acting like it's normal. Let's get this guy ready. You got friendships. Some guys take that shit real serious. There's loyalty involved. Who the hell knows how that affected things? But you know, in the fight, I mean, I think simplicity and fight IQ was the key. And as far as what happened in the gym, I think the first inclination when Gilbert was on his back and that Kamaru didn't want to follow him down, Kenny, was a sign that he probably got submitted in sparring.
Right, so exactly.
He go down there. He, you know, and Gilbert's, you know, throws like a maniac. You know what I mean? So when he had him hurt, then he was willing to go down. So he was patient. Simplicity was the key to me. And again, Trevor Whitman did a great job. People could say, oh, what? So what? He told him to throw the jab. No, that's what a coach is there for. Because look at the difference. They both got hit with the same right hand. Look how Kamaru responded. He regrouped and went back to the jab. When you see Gilbert Burns get hit with that same right hand, and they buckled kind of the same exact way. You see Gilbert get hit.
Yeah.
You see a look of frenzy in his face. There was a total difference of demeanor on how they handled when they hit adversity. And to me, that was the difference in the fight. You know what I mean? Unequivocally. hats off to Trevor Whitman. He goes back to the jab. The guy had a great jab. Knocked him down with the jab. Mm-hmm. Right jab and a left jab. It was switching leads. So you got to keep it simple. I thought Kamaru showed. That's why he's a champion. He found a way to win after adversity. That's what champions do, right? Gilbert got hit. He never recovered. He looked like a deer in headlights, really.
Yeah.
I'm not taking nothing away. I'm just saying what yeah. happened. You could see right. he got frantic. He's just throwing shit where the other guy got hurt. And he goes, all right, I'm calm. Let me get back in this fight. I'm not going to overextend myself. I'm going to keep it basic. You know, I've been there. And, you know, and I think that to me was the difference in the fight.
And in terms of what you were saying about them grappling and training, Ray, direct quote to us from Gilbert Burns in our fighter meeting, Kamaru knows I can submit him from every angle. And when Gilbert Burns says that to you, you just don't take it as anything but the truth. So Kamaru Usman probably wise not to engage him on the ground. So you cornered Matt Serra more than once against George St. Pierre, who is ubiquitously regarded as the greatest UFC welterweight in history. And I don't know if I'm asking you to put what Kamaru's done into context, but this is a really special fighter, Ray, and 13-0 in the UFC. And it's hard for me to recall him losing like multiple minutes other than some big shots in the Covington fight.
Yeah, no, look what you got to like about Kamaru at this point. He's had moments where he looked like he was possibly going to lose. And again, that's where I go back. He finds a way to win. He's definitely got the mindset of a champion. You could see it. He's got and he's got the physical attributes to back it up. But I love this guy's mindset. He did not look good in that first round. I agree with Kenny. He lost the first round and he got buckled. I really thought it might have been over. But he did regroup, and that's all you can ask for a guy. And again, that goes back to the corner. You're a champion because of the jab. Whether that's even true or not doesn't even matter. Just I want to keep it simple.
Yeah,
I don't want you to overextend yourself and get into a brawl with this guy who throws heavy. You can see that heavy and erratic. I mean, he's just winging. So I think it was a great job like that. But there's no doubt that Kamaru Usman is there to stay. And he's, you know, I'm switching subjects, but even listening to him talk where he's like, people got to start realizing. So, I mean, this guy, everybody thinks he's great. So in his, you know, perception is reality, but his perception is that people don't even recognize him. I've never heard that from anybody I've talked to. So that was a little crazy for me to hear that, you know, he feels kind of disrespected somehow because he is a great champion.
I absolutely agree with you, Ray. I do think that people don't, it's not like Conor, you know, where people are going to buy the pay-per-view because Kamaru's fighting, and that's a different thing. But as far as respecting him as a fighter, I think that that actually is a big part of his success in a lot of ways. I think that fuels him and allows him to perform like he does. I think that nastiness kind of comes out of him and he takes it out on his opponents.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's just funny to hear him say that. But I do agree that it fuels him. And you could even see
13-0 in the UFC. You're like,
Yeah, even the intensity when he called out Masvidal, he's just like, that was the. He's just disgusted, you know. He just, you know, now it could be two reasons. It could be, you know, because Kamaru, I'm assuming he's not the biggest draw for pay-per-view. So why not get a name that you know is going to draw because it means more money? But it seemed like it was beyond that to me. It was, he's really hates this guy because, you know, he might be right. I took that fight on 6 days' notice because I haven't, you know, that's an excuse. I go in there, I do whatever I can, I lose. Hey, I took the fight on 6 days' notice. You know what I'm saying? So he might be right. He's feeling something, but you're probably right, Kenny. It fuels him, which is a great thing. But to me, it was just interesting what's going on in that guy's mind when we all think the guy's a great fighter. We're comparing, you know, he's already passed GSP's record.
Right.
You know, what else can you say about the guy? I've never heard anybody criticize him.
Right. Well, that's why I think Rogan was caught off guard. And I remember in 2015 after he beat Haider Hassan walking up to him and telling him back then, dude, you're going to be the champion, man. You're going to be the champion. You know, that was 6 years ago. So, congratulations to Kamaru Usman. Certainly a lot of respect for that man in this space. Ray, you have a dog. We're in the business of saving lives here on the Anakin Florian podcast. We save dogs. Yeah. We save hamsters. Yeah. That's what we're about. So
I didn't know that, but thanks for educating me.
If you had to pick one active welterweight, I mean, it looks as though it's going to be probably Usman versus Masvidal 2. Maybe those guys coach the Ultimate Fighter. But if you had to send one welterweight in there for them to not take your dog away, to beat Kamaru Usman, Who are you sending in there? I need to know who you believe.
And I think you know the answer to that.
WB?
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah. That's the guy. Why is he not fought yet? That's a nightmare matchup.
No, and he has the momentum right now. Yeah, and
why not?
In his last fight. No, no argument for me. And
Dana
White, in a lot of respects, loves a meritocracy, and I think he would be able to make a championship case for Wonderboy right now as well. Absolutely. But you think stylistically that's a very interesting matchup, and a lot of fans agree.
Now listen, stylistically, Wonderboy is a nightmare for anybody.
Everybody, yeah.
It really doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, he could get taken down in the first four rounds.
Right.
And kick you in the head in the fifth round.
Like, right.
He's always going to have that ability to get you out of there. And he is tricky, you know, and I'd love to see that fight. I really would. I think, you know, look, two nice guys, too. No animosity between. Look at Wonderboy.
Right. Right.
You know, he calls you out. You don't even feel like you're getting called out. Like, it's done.
I know.
Nice professional way. Like, I think that guy could get away with anything. I don't think I've ever heard him talk negative about anybody. And honestly, I think WB would just love to have the chance at him just to see where he's at. I think that's who he is.
I think the number one goal, and we're going to be joined by Bilal Muhammad here in about 10 minutes, has to be to try to get this division moving forward. You know, because just go look at the rankings and how many guys are deserving of big fights right now. So I think the best case scenario, regardless of who you think it's going to be, is to try to turn this division around in 3 or 4 months. But if they go with the reality TV show, then it's not going to go in that direction. Go ahead, Rick.
I know you're friends with Bilal. I don't really think I know him, but what a tough, gutsy fight that was, man. His leg kicked off. That guy's a tough, that's a grinder, man. That guy is in your face. Maybe not the prettiest guy to look at, but hats off to him, man. He had overcome. Those kicks suck.
I ask you a question about these kicks? And I want to ask both of you this question. So we'll start with Ray, and then we'll get an answer from Ken Flo as well. Bilal Muhammad, in his post-scrum or whatever interview after the fight, talked about these calf kicks. And, you know, when you're in training, you got shin pads on and they kind of are what they are. But it seems to me, based upon his comments and based to everything that I've heard and tried to listen to over the past year plus, there's not really a great way to condition yourself. It's going to come down to some toughness in there as it's happening, the extent to which the opponent's able to land right on that muscle. And if they get one really on that sweet spot that completely takes your leg out from a nerve standpoint. But it would seem to me that there's not really so much you can do in training to try to prevent this weapon from becoming a real problem in the fight.
Yeah, I mean, look, John, the only thing, honestly, and Kenny, you could, we never really had this back in the day, I don't think, right? I mean, like, if that happened in sparring, you'd say, you'd call the guy a doofus.
Right.
What are you kicking the guy in the ankle for? You know, like, it would be like, it wouldn't even, you would actually probably yell at the guy. Like, it'd be like kicking a guy in the balls. You know what I mean? Like, but you have to keep moving, man. That's the thing. The guys that stand in front of you and they plod and they're heavy on that leg, they're in trouble, you know? So the constant movement, the side-to-side movement, the in and out, don't give the guy the chance to set up, is at least a start, right? That's at least a start. And that's what you got to work in sparring. You have to have a guy literally trying to kick in. You got to get that leg out of the way, either with movement or, you know, I call it a different type of footwork, but moving the leg back and then coming back in again. But it's not easy. It's easier said than done. It's like, how are you going to condition your head? Bang it against a heavy bag? Like, there's no conditioning for this, right, Kenny? Like, I'm going to get my head tough. I just thought banging it against the heavy bag. What are you going to do? That nerve is so exposed down there. I'm surprised it took this long to figure that out, you know? But I guess it, you know, it took a sport like MMA where everything goes, you know what I mean? So, you know,
Kenny, what do you think?
And the other thing is, look at Felder. He walked through 50 of those. How the frick that guy did it, I don't understand. But he's got, I'm sure it's part fit, the way your body is structured. And I'm sure it's part mental, how you could overcome, you know, the pain and just push through it till the end of the fight.
No question. Listen, you look at Bilal and you look at the way he fights. That is a dude is just, you know, mentally different than other people. And, you know, we've seen other fighters, excellent fighters, technically superior to a guy like Bilal, but they get kicked in the leg. And now the fight is essentially over, right? And they just don't have that mental fortitude to push through. But like Ray said, the way you deal with the calf kick is you move. Don't get hit by it, because literally it could take one calf kick to change the whole fight. That's how devastating it is. You know, on the quad, you have a lot more muscle. You know, and it kind of feels like you got a Charlie horse, and then you get kicked again and again. At least the muscle kind of, you know, can kind of dissipate that hemorrhaging or whatever's going on in there. But in the calf kick, you get kicked on that peroneal nerve, and dude, you can't step your foot on the ground. You know, we saw that Henry Cejudo, where, you know, he kept kind of stepping. Michael Chandler, we saw that outside of the organization, brutal, where he kept, like, you know, stepping on his ankle because he could. But those guys push through somehow. And, you know, it's the same thing. When you see a guy who's hurt, who is able to come back or at least fight on, and other people are just like, yeah, I've had enough. And it really does come down to that mindset.
Yeah, look, now, John, you can't hurt what you can't hit, right? So it's the same thing.
Exactly.
Like, you might not have the best chin. Guess what? You move your head. That's right. Your defense. You start getting out of the way. You evade punches. You don't put your head on the end of them. And that's going to be the same thing with this. Whether you're going to have to switch up your stance, switch up your footwork, that's where we're heading, for, without a doubt.
This was the most interesting thing to come out of any of our fighter meetings. And Ken Flo, I think you might find this particularly interesting. So Jim Miller didn't get a chance to fight Bobby Green this weekend, right? But in our fighter meeting, Jim Miller, I asked him about the calf kick because of Poirier and McGregor and the success that he had against Dustin in 2017.
Yeah.
So Jim Miller first went to employ the calf kick in 2012 when he was preparing for Nathan Diaz, okay? And he used it in that fight. And then he was going to use it again in the Joe Lozon fight. He used it in the Lozon fight and injured his shin doing it, and the shin injury literally stayed with him for 3 fucking years, right? So when you saw him in fights thereafter, he's like, the reason I wasn't throwing low leg kicks is because when you're throwing it, you're exposing potentially your own knee, your own ankle, your own toes, right, to suffer any sort of injuries. So you never know what a fighter is dealing with going in, but sometimes if you see a fighter not employing that weapon offensively, you know, there could be hell to pay on that side too.
Yeah, and two things to that too is that one, you mentioned something in sparring. I've seen guys get hurt in sparring with the shin guards on, where their leg is
messed
up.
Right,
you know what I mean. And like Jim Miller says, like everybody thinks, like, you know, like Thai boxing, your guy, you know, so you throw a kick and the guy checks, he's the guy that's hurting, or you know, or everybody's hurting.
Yeah,
desensitized that shin, and they're still icing the shin after the fight. You know, it's not nothing's for free on either side, right, Kenny? I mean, it's
I tell the story when I fought Jose Aldo. I've told this before, but when he kicked me in the inside of my leg, which, you know, I always thought it wasn't a big deal, I lost nerve sensation in my leg for like a year. It was dead. No feeling in my leg for like a year, dude. It's just like he may have kicked me like 4 or 5 times, but it felt, you know, different.
No, it's crazy, man.
Yeah. You know?
Bilal also said in his little scrum there that that if you take one practice, you know, you can miss the next 2 days of practice. You know, that's the thing. Right. So you have to be real careful trying to maximize and get all those practices in. All right, 19 more sleeps until Piotr Jan versus Jermaine Sterling. Does it make you anxious or nervous, or your heart skip a beat when I say that, or does it just get you excited?
Yes, it does.
It makes talk to me. You got a hot microphone. Talk to me.
Very excited, man. You know, Aljo's in Vegas now. When he left here, he looked great. Very happy where he was. I even told him to take a couple of days off. I think, you know, I didn't want him to peak too soon, because when he left here, I was like, dude, we're ready to go in like 10 days from here. Like, that was it. So pull back a little bit and then just keep that cardio going, because his mind's in the right spot. He looks great. You know, I'll get out there about 10 days before, 9 days, whatever the heck it is. And hopefully he's got all the guys from the gym with him. He's got Nixik, you know, looking after him. So I feel good. I'm just really excited. And now Joe's just a unique cat, man. I don't know, you know, you don't know what he's going to do, but it's going to be a great fight. That I can guarantee you.
So interesting. It's so interesting, especially with Corey Sanhagen lurking, right? Because
Sanhagen's a major problem.
He really is a major problem. And so is Piotr Jan. I'm so excited for that fight and the opportunity for Aljo. Raymond, do you know the betting line as yet?
No, I would think that's got to be pretty close to
it. Is Aljo right now, where I place my bets, is an even money underdog, and that would have Piotr Jan as a slight favorite. So
I think that's accurate.
Yeah. Ken Flo's nodding his head as if to say he might be wagering on one side or the other. But you'll have to wait until the first week of March to get Ken Flo's pick here on the Anakin Florian podcast. All right. Anything else before we let you go? Anything else on the tip of your tongue? Alexa Grasso, Kelvin Gastelum, Ricky Simone, Julian the Cuban Missile Crisis Marquez.
What a come from behind victory that was. Another Krause. Hats off to James Krause, man. He got that guy motivated, and he got that job done in the third. I love seeing that shit, man. I really do, because he was losing that fight, and wow, what a victory that was. Really, really good stuff. I mean, it was a lot of good, interesting fights, I thought. I liked everything. But, you know, I just thought of something. Before I go, man, I want to everybody say a prayer for Vinny Pecora, great friend. It's Chris Weidman's father-in-law. He was hit by a car out in front of the gym. Was an accident, but he's not doing good. He's in bad shape. So prayers to Vinny. Big MMA fan. Was a big part of the gym. Everybody loved him. The guy was a character, man. I just hope he's okay. And we'll know within the next couple of days. But just keep everybody keep Vinny Pecora in your hearts. One of the good guys. Vietnam vet. Did a couple of tours. I think he even did a tour so his brother didn't have to go. He's that guy. You know what I mean? So tough motherfucker, man. And I hope he pulls through.
Very nice of you to shout him out on the way out, Vinny. Thanks, Ray. Hey, appreciate it, buddy. And hey, thanks for the extended time today, man. Hair looks good. I mean, do you really not wash it?
100%. That's true. I mean, when I say not wash it, maybe twice a year. Is that, you know?
Right.
Maybe. Kenny, don't wash your hair. You'll have it forever. That's the bottom line.
That's what everyone says. It's just hot water. You scrub, you scratch your hair, and you're good, right? That's what everyone says.
Not even hot water.
Water doesn't even get that touch Ray's hair.
Guys, you guys made my Monday morning, man. This is fun. I will I like this live platform too.
No, it's fun, and it will be even more live next week. Rest assured.
Wow, even maybe. More live.
Yeah.
Be more
well,
live
this is technically this. Live to tape. This is technically live to tape. We tape it live, but we put it on tape. Next week, it's just going to be live. So take our call.
Live tape. You ruined my whole day. I thought this was I got to go. I can't take
it.
Take it easy, guys. Have a great day. Right. See you next week.
Is the Ray Longo Minute. Every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. I find this calf kick thing fascinating, if you can't tell, Ken Flo, because you really, the Jim Miller thing, it just struck me. It's like, hey, this might be a good way to attack Nate Diaz. And then maybe we'll use it a little bit against Joe. And the next thing you know, Jim Miller's literally paying for it for like 3 years of his career. You know,
dude, it's at the end of the day, it's bone on bone contact. That's not good. Yeah, it's like, let me just crash my body into another body, you know, like you do in football. There's repercussions for that. You're literally smashing your skeleton into another man's skeleton. I mean, it shit's going to happen. Yeah.
Got a lot of respect for you fighters. A lot of respect for you fighters. Toughest human beings on the planet. Speaking of which, let us get to the star of this channel's Remember the Show video podcast, UFC welterweight contender, Bilal Muhammad. And we are now joined by the man. I wonder if he's had any food yet. Bilal Muhammad with another big win. That's four in a row if you're keeping track at home. 8 of 9 in the UFC's welterweight division. It's good to see you, man. I didn't get to see you after the fight in Vegas, but congratulations on a big W, man. You back home safe? Everything good?
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Yeah, back home, back in Chicago. Literally, it's another blizzard outside right now. Like, hate him. I'm like, dude, I should have just stayed in Vegas the extra week. I was like, I was telling myself I was, and then I was like, I didn't pull the trigger, you know, after the fight. You're like, I just want to go home, see the family and stuff like that. But, man, looking at the outside right now, like, I got to go shovel. I'm like, dude, I hate my life.
Well, I was loving your professional life over the weekend. And, you know, here we couldn't be happier for you, obviously. Have you watched back the performance? And if so, what were your thoughts on those 15 minutes with Diego Lima?
Yeah, I watched back the performance. A lot of the stuff that I wanted to do worked out. But, you know, there was a lot of openings that I left that I should have attacked more. I started after the first round. I stopped attacking the body. I should have went to the body a lot more. I feel like in the third round, if I went to the body more, I could have dropped him and finished him. I feel like, and then a couple of the takedowns I was going for, like I didn't fully commit to them. They were just to do it, to give them something to think about. And then back to striking, I was getting too comfortable striking. I got to get to in the zone of once I take, if I would have took him down, I think I would have finished him pretty easily.
So I watched some of the stuff you did media wise after the fight, and you were asked about the calf kicks. And I guess my question would be, how much of it is just physical and mental toughness in the fight? And how much of it is maybe decent genetics, and how much of it was maybe his inability to hit you right flush on the muscle?
I think a lot of it was just being like mentally tough. It was one of those where it was landing, it was hurting, but I was like, it was more of those just pissing me off. And I was like, I'm just going to hit the guy in the heart. Like the whole time, because I was like, I train with a lot of like kickboxers, and I'm asking them like, so what's the best way to check the calf kick? And you know, like, obviously every gym is thinking about training, and every coach thinks, oh, you can check it, but you really can't check it. Every single one of the guys, best kickboxers I know, they're like, move out of the way of it. Like, avoid it. Don't get hit by it. Like, back out a little bit, shuffle back out. But, for this fight, I was I sit there and I watched a lot of tapes fight week, not of my opponent, but just a fight of fighters that I like. And then a couple fights that I was watching a lot of pressure fighters was Chael Sonnen against Nate Marquardt. If you guys ever watched that, Chael Sonnen just stayed in his face the whole time. And then Khabib against Barbosa, and because Barbosa's a big kicker too, and I just wanted to see what Khabib did against him. He just stayed in his face. So that was my plan for this fight, just staying in his face, being within. I want to smell his breath. That was my goal. And you know, with those calf kicks, they were hurting, but it was like one of those, like, I'm not going to show him it hurts. I want to stay in his face the whole time. I don't really care. Let it hurt. I'll wait till after the fight. I'm icing right now, so I don't really care right now.
Right.
The pain is good right now.
My man, Ken Flo, I'll send it over to you, but it's kind of interesting to hear a fighter talking about just watching film that isn't related to your fight per se, but that could be applicable in your fight. You hear a lot of guys talk about film study. You don't hear a lot of guys talk about maybe watching a fight of a pressure fighter before trying to employ that style, you know?
Absolutely. I think the best martial artists, the best fighters, the best athletes are the best watchers. They're the people that are out there looking at what's working, what's not. How can I integrate this? Does it work for me? Does it work for my game? Does it work against my opponent? So, that's great to hear, man. You know, what are some of your favorite fighters that you like to watch?
A lot of the fighters that I like to watch are based off the fights that I go against. So, like, I'll look at a couple of my opponents, and I'd be like, who fights like them but better than them? So, my last fight when I fought Lyman Good, I know that I didn't want to stay in the pocket with him. So, like, I watched a lot of Zabit, how he always switches stances and get you thinking. I watched Zabit against Calvin Kattar, because Calvin Kattar is kind of like a Lyman Good, where he throws bombs at you. And I wanted to see what he did against him. A fighter that I love watching now is Corey Sandhagen, man. The way he moves is just a whole different style. And I try to implement that in my game, where I was switching stances a lot, but it wasn't because of calf kick. I was just like, I'm trying to put that in my game now, where it just like changes it up. And it surprises you a lot of the time too, when a guy's switching stances on you, you're like, oh, wait, is he southpaw or is he not? And I'm just trying to get more comfortable doing that. And just always evolving, trying to be a different fighter for my last fight.
Definitely saw that this fight around, man. And you've been Mr. Consistency lately as well. Do you see another opponent for yourself in the future? Is there a guy that you say, like, this is who I want to fight now that you're kind of climbing up the rankings a little bit?
Yeah. Like, honestly, I called out the leash, but I really had nothing against him. But, like, a lot of people were telling me, man, you against Magny would be great. And I'm like, dude, that would be a great fight. I think that would be an awesome fight. We're both at that them guys that break guys with cardio a lot of the time. And we both do high volume. I think it'll be a fun fight. I know he's coming off a loss, but he's still ranked number 9.
Right.
And he has a lot of big names on his record. So I think that would be an awesome fight for me, too. I think that would be a good one. And then, honestly, like a fighter that I respect a lot, and would be a great fight, but I don't know if like he would want to do it as his last fight, is Damian Maia. I always wanted to go against I really haven't gone against a grappler in the UFC. A lot of the guys I go against are strikers, and I just want to test myself against the best. And a lot of people haven't seen my grappling, and I want to show it. So I want to show that I can compete with the best guys, because you got Kamaru Usman as the champ right now. And he's mostly known as a grappler, even though he got a knockout, but competing against a guy like Maia and proving myself against him, it's going to get me prepared for that title fight.
I really thought it was a smart call out, the leech, Li Jingliang, because when I looked at the rankings this morning, you have to make a realistic call out, right? See, I think Michael Chiesa, for example, makes a lot of sense, but he's going after Colby Covington. He's going after numbers, you know, 2 and 3. And you could do that too. I mean, you could have called out Colby, right? But I think for you, maybe one win away from getting a top 6 guy or something, The schedule aligns with the Leech. You're both on winning streaks. So I think when you look at the rankings on the surface, people could say, why is 13 calling out 12? But it's like, hey, man, you got to try to get a fight that's actually bookable. And I think that one is in 3 months, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That one. And like, it makes the most sense. They're going to Singapore. And I'm like sitting there looking at it like, I could sit there and call out Kobe and try to make a scene and try to get, views from, the Twitter and stuff like that, but it's right. Not going to be like all right. My boys are like, oh, call out Nate Diaz, say Midwest gangster against West Coast gang. And I'm like, dude, like Nate Diaz not going to accept my fight. Like that ain't going to happen. So like you said, once you get that moment, like everybody's watching, that's on ESPN, you'll call a fight that makes sense. And it doesn't have to be like the Leech, I'm going to kill you, you loser. It doesn't, yo, hey, you're 12, I'm 13. Let's do it.
I absolutely love it, man. Well, we're so happy for you. I mean, were you feeling the love? Were you feeling how many people were able to watch your fight in sort of that prime slot on ESPN? Did you feel the love this weekend?
Yeah, honestly, you know, like a lot of people were like upset. Like, oh, all these fights getting canceled on a pay-per-view. Put me on a pay-per-view. I'm like, I'd rather be on ESPN. I was like, there's going to be a lot more eyes on ESPN. And it's funny because Zayn, the singer from One Direction, I didn't even know who that was, but Megan O'Leary was like, I did an interview with her. She's like, oh, Zayn tweeted about you. And I'm like, right. Oh, no way. And I'm like, yeah. And then I walked out of the room like, man, who's Zayn? And then I look at my phone and my sister texts me like, oh my God, Zayn.
Yeah.
Zayn. I was like, it's cool, you know, just having like stars like that or other people from different avenues like tweeting about you. And it just shows that, you know, I'm getting the right attention.
Our producer, Zach Candido, got in my ear. He's like, dude, you got to acknowledge that tweet. I'm like, dude, I don't know who that guy is, man. I don't know what you want me to say. But I think they did put the tweet on the air at least. So, hey, I'm not sure if I heard you cuss for the first time, but I do know that you absorbed an eye poke that was pretty bad. But thankfully, you were able to recover. But one of those seemed to really bother you at least for a while. But then maybe within a minute, it got better. Yes.
Yeah. I had like so many people text me the video of it. Like, You swore. And I was like, because I never curse at all. And I was like, it was just making me mad because, like, he did it early. And then, like, you know, you just see guys like Nick Lentz, who just retired from it, eye poke. And, like, I'm very big about guys when I train with them. Like, if you're one of those guys, put your fingers out. I'm not going to train with you. I'm not going to spar with you. I don't want to take a chance of something stupid, like a big injury or something like that happening. Because, my eyes are very important, you know. And then like he kept doing it and I was like, bro, like if it happens again, I'm gonna go nuts. And then that second time, like it was an eye poke, but then I was like, I know I'm breaking this guy. So like it was still right. Blurry, but I'm like, no, I gotta get right back into it. I can't let this guy catch a break. Cause the first time I did it, I was like checking my eye and then like I saw him walking over towards his corner and like he was talking to his corner a little bit, but I'm like, yo, I can't give him any time to rest. I haven't met his breaking point. This is the third round. I got to get right back in there. So like, I was like, I got one good eye right now. I'm just going to go out there and stay in his face again.
And how's the eye right now? I mean, you look like you don't have much of a scratch on you.
Yeah. I'm good. Everything's clean right now. My ankle and calf is pretty swollen right now, but nothing. A little snow can't help.
All right. That's right. You got that snow. That's, I guess that's a good way to lean into the positive. All right. A few rapid fire questions here on the way out with Bilal. Remember the name Muhammad. All right. So other than yourself, if you had, this is our poll question this week. If you had to pick one active welterweight and you can't pick yourself, I mean, obviously, you know, I'd be sending you in there. If I had to save a hamster's life and I had to send one welterweight in there to beat Kamaru Usman, you know, I'm sending Bilal, remember the name Muhammad. But if you had to pick one guy sort of the mix of Colby Covington, Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, Gilbert Burns, or Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Those are five guys who are maybe most likely to get Usman next. Like, who do you think has the best chance to actually beat this monster?
Honestly, the most difficult guy, I think, is Wonderboy. You know, his style is just so, like, it's weird. Like, I feel like the only way you could beat him is the Woodley way where you just wait and it's kind of like a boring fight. Or, I mean, I know he lost to Matt Brown, but that was early. But I think that, you know, his style is just so difficult to fight against. And I feel like everybody else really has a style that Usman has seen a little bit more. He's fought those guys a lot, but he really hasn't fought a guy like Wonderboy, who's kickboxing is just on another level. I think that's the hardest guy.
Have you worked out since the fight? Please tell me you have not worked out since the fight.
We were in the back at the Apex, and I was like, oh, after the fight, we have to come back here and lift weights. just to act like we're working out right away. And then, but they took us out right away. But I was like, nah. I was looking at, I want to go get a swim in it. I told Paul Felder, I'm like, my cardio felt on another level. Because usually I would always swim for camps, but I was always like swimming half a mile. And then when Paul Felder was on his triathlon stuff, I was seeing him post miles. And they were all on like the same workout thing program where you see what the other guy's doing. And I'm like, oh, you swam miles today? So then this whole camp, I was swimming miles. And then my cardio was on another level. I like felt so good. I told him, man, I need to up it up some more.
So I don't ask you that question in this context of Leon Edwards, but I just think in this COVID-19 climate, it's very interesting. And if Leon wants to stay on that March 13th show, I mean, that's unrealistic for you, I would think, because of the calf, you know, but I don't know, man. I think the Li Jing Liang fight is so realistic for you, but I don't know, man. I just think that you better be careful. You don't get a call in a week saying Leon needs somebody with a number on March 13th in a main event.
I was literally thinking about that one too. I like that one too. And I like just to have a main event slot. Like I sat there, I tell people I'm a 5-round fighter.
Right.
But like you said, I want to see how this camp works out. Right. Hopefully it's better soon. But like in shape wise, other health wise, like I feel like perfect right now and I'm good. And I like that matchup. He's been out a while. And if you really think about it, like he's on a big streak, but like he hasn't really beat nobody nuts. Like, well, man, this guy's a monster. He's killing all these guys with ease. Like, it's very winnable fight for me, and I like it a lot.
Well, and I think for him, if you look at the upside, right, that you've won 4 in a row, for him to be able to add a scalp like Bilal Muhammad to his resume as he builds a championship path, you know? So, I don't know. Just throwing it out there. But, of course, the timing probably doesn't align the way your schedule and the leeches will. Have you booked the guests for Thursday's Remember the Show yet?
I was just talking to my brother. I think it's going to have to be a fan show. My brother's like, what about DC? I was like, yo, I got to get in contact with them first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm going to do a fan show just to get like the fans more involved in it this week. And then next week, be back on with getting my guests going.
Well, if you ever need help getting in touch with DC, I will FaceTime that motherfucker on your behalf anytime you need me to. And maybe we'll get you Joe Rogan one day. You know, we'll get you Joe Rogan.
My literal plan was after the post-fight interview was to tell Joe Rogan, my call out's for you to come on my show. And I choked. I messed up.
That's hilarious that you were thinking about doing that, because that actually might have gotten him on the show if you put him on the spot on ESPN in front of millions. But we'll see what we can do. Hey, it's great to catch up with you. Hey, before I let you go, my last rapid fire question. What's your favorite sports team? I mean, do you have one of these Chicago teams that you root for more than the others or no?
I love the Bulls, man. Basketball is my first love. I love basketball, so Bulls.
All right, Chicago Bulls fan. Hey, congratulations, man. We appreciate the time, and we hope you heal up, and we look forward to Thursday's episode. Remember the Show right here on the Anakin Florian Podcast YouTube channel. And hey, man, seeing you rock those AF letters during your fight week, we made the right choice in terms of you and aligning with you. And again, we couldn't be happier for you. So enjoy the W, man, and we look forward to catching up with you soon, sir.
All right, fellas.
There he
Congrats,
is.
Congrats, dude.
UFC welterweight contender Bilal, remember the name Muhammad. What a good dude. Pretty awesome, insightful man. Stuff too, in terms of that film study, you know. And it also is very interesting when you think about preparation from one fight to the next. You fight Lyman Good, you're trying to avoid the pocket at all costs. You fight Diego Lima, right, and literally you're trying to smell his breath, you know.
He's a student of the game, man. And again, you could definitely see that. He's a smart guy. He's been preparing well, and it's obviously paying off. The dude really has been Mr. Consistency.
Hey, before we get to Ian Parker and the main event challenge, we have a couple minutes here. I wanted to shout out Kelvin Gastelum, because such a big pressure spot for him, Ken Flo, with the back-to-back-to-back losses, being winless since 2018. And he was so competitive in that fight in a lot of respects with Israel Adesanya not all that long ago. And he felt like he was competing for his job. So I wanted to at least acknowledge KG. And for Alexa Grasso to perform this way against Macy Barber and to bank two rounds like that, I'm just so happy for her, because she has seemingly done everything the right way except for being in the wrong weight class maybe for too long. And, right, you know, she can lift weights now. And I'm just excited to see if she can really take this thing to the next level.
I thought Grasso performed beautifully. I think she is a much, much, much improved grappler. You could see that against Macy Barber. Macy just seemed like she was just all over the place. Grasso looked like a true professional out there. And you could see the experience advantage and just how clean her technique looked. And for Kelvin, that was the most motivated I've seen him. Like, he had that look in his eyes.
which seemed like he really wanted to be there and really wanted to fight. And that was a very motivated Ian Heinisch, by the way, as well.
Yes.
And a tough matchup stylistically from the outside looking in for Kelvin. But Kelvin did a great job of out-wrestling Ian and just winning many of the exchanges. So great job by Kelvin. Good to see a good guy like that back on track.
And you said on our podcast last week you were going to get a real good lens into his future in terms of the championship desire and hunger. I don't know if you watched my media scrum in Vegas, but of course I was shouting out my man, Ken Flo.
You can see that.
The president of Team Florian. So, and Ricky Simon, is that not the most watchable fighter in mixed martial arts? It's amazing to me that he can sustain offense like this. I mean, he is the Energizer Bunny. I mean, Merab Dwalishvili comes to mind, of course, anytime we have that conversation. And Brian Kelleher is an offensive guy in his own right. But, dude, Ricky fucking Simon, man. It's like I can't wait to see him in a five-round setting, you know?
Yeah, dude, he's nonstop, and he really is. He's pretty fearless. I mean, even the techniques that he throws against a dangerous guy like Kelleher, I mean, the double-up elbow coming forward, you know, looking for it, he's always trying to do something. He's always trying to take you down, throw a different strike that he didn't throw before. He's a tough guy to deal with, man. I thought it was a really good performance from him.
A great card all around, and I don't know if you saw Anthony Fluffy Hernandez submitting the seven-time Abu Dhabi champion Adolfo Vieira. Doesn't feel like a submission to me. I mean, of course it's the sub over the guy, okay? But it's mixed martial arts. I mean, the dude's bloodied and concussed when you submit him. But what a performance. Right. What a career changer for Anthony Hernandez.
Well, John, I think you nailed it, man. He defeated him mentally first, right? It was like Vieira just couldn't get anything going that night. I mean, a little bit here and there, but Hernandez was just tagging him. He was beating him up. He was dictating for the most part where the fight went, and he was surviving, you know, all the attacks of Vieira. And I think Vieira just he just lost his mental focus out there and kind of just quit on himself a little bit. And it showed that he still has a lot of work to do. He still has, you know, a lot of experience to gain in regards to the striking. He was just kind of trading. He wasn't trying to set anything up. And even on the grappling, he just looked confused and out of it and tired. I was really confused by the performance. Rodolfo is recognized as, you know, by many to be one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in the last several years. As far as, you know, you look at his competition record and his pedigree. But that night, I mean, he was submitted by a guy that probably didn't deserve to be on the mat with him. And it just goes to show you mixed martial arts is a completely different animal.
Right.
And, you know, just like Carlson Gracie said back in the day, you know, you hit a black belt a few times, they become a brown belt, then become a purple belt, then become a blue belt.
Right.
And he was beating him up. He was beating him down to size. Yeah.
Anthony Hernandez, complete fighter, comes from a great gym. Shout out to Jim West and MMA Gold. And I'm really excited to see him spin it forward because this is a huge confidence builder. And he seemed to know that this was going to happen. He was talking about the submission. I wish he had probably bet on himself at 30-1 to beat the guy by submission. But
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable when you sort of dive in when you're preparing for a guy like Adolfo Vieira in terms of the jiu-jitsu credentials. And, you know, other than that dude, Buchecha, I believe he has been
fired. Buchecha, exactly.
Yeah, it was close.
You had Vieira. You're saying Vieira better than I do, though. Yeah. That's perfect.
All right. Well, that's it on UFC 258. Appreciate the back and forth from everybody on social media. Good stuff from Longo. But we got to make some selections because the UFC has a 15-fighter coming up on Saturday night from the UFC Apex. You can see it live on ESPN Plus. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, I'm going to update the standings here off the top, but I feel like we got to start honoring some of these punishments, if I'm going to even bother to have our great intern, Casey Williams, update the standings. But Ken Flo and Yanni the Greek tied 4-4. That means Team Florian maintains control of the board, which means Ian Parker will lead on the main event. 13-12 is the lead for Team Florian. We come up on UFC Fight Night, Blades versus Lewis. This is an obnoxious 15-fighter from the Apex Saturday on ESPN+. Six main card selections for you today, and the Duck Ian Parker is here to make them. Ian is live on social media. Well, not live, I should say, but he's there at Ian Parker MMA. That's a beautiful filter behind you for your backdrop as usual. It's nice to see you, buddy.
Nice little kitchen shade. Thank you.
Oh, is that what that is? I always thought it was like a special filter because you have this estate in Florida. And I was like, he probably has an air conditioning filter that takes up an entire wall. So, okay. So that's a window behind you.
Yeah, it's I'm in the kitchen. Behind me is a giant window with a glare. So, yeah. If I was going to do a filter, don't you think I would have been like more creative? Would have put a picture of you and Kenny behind me and like me like this, like superimposed, like I'm actually wanted, you know, something like that.
All right. Well, let us make some picks because there are a whole lot of them. I mean, I pulled up that fight card last night and I was like, man, where are we going to begin and end this thing? But we're going to start at heavyweight. England's Tom Aspinall, -245 against the ageless Andrei Arlovsky, who is +205. 34th UFC appearance for Andrei Arlovsky. And he's not just trotting out there getting a six-figure paycheck, Ken Flo. He's won 2 straight, 3 of 4. Ian Parker, the big question for you is, any value on the pit bull in that +200 range, or do you like Tom Aspinall?
I keep picking against Andrei Arlovsky, and he keeps winning, but I just think this one might be a little – I keep saying the same thing when he fights a prospect. This is going to be too much for him. I think Aspinall is the real deal, especially in this weight class. I think the speed is going to be a factor. You know, then again, Arlovsky has been fighting really well, but I'm going to go with Aspinall here. I just think too much. I think Arlovsky is going to see that L.
Ken Flo, Tom Aspinall, 6-0 overall, I believe, 2-0 with a couple of finishes in the UFC. What do you think about him here against Andrei Arlovsky?
You know, to answer your question from a little bit earlier, I do think there's value in Arlovsky, you know, based on what he's been doing lately. He definitely looks like he wants to be there, and he's looking to not just win but hurt you. However, I agree with Ian here. I think Aspinall is the real deal. He looks like a tremendous prospect. Big guy, but very athletic guy who can move. He could really hurt you on the feet. As long as he doesn't get stupid and just trades with someone like Arlovsky, he's got to pick his places, when to go in, when to get out, and he could certainly do that. I do see Aspinall winning that fight.
All right, next up in middleweight, this fight was canceled on fight day last month on Fight Island due to a non-COVID-related injury involving Phil Hawes. Rebooked here against Nassourdine Imavov. -110 on both sides. Ian, what do you think about this one? You got Imavov out of France, hasn't lost in almost 5 years, seems to be a pretty well-rounded guy, trains under Fernand Lopez. What do you think about him and Phil Hawes, -110 on both sides?
I think he's a well-rounded guy. You know, he's shown so far, he's legit. I just feel like there's so much more potential in Phil Hawes. I feel like we've seen, when we see Phil Hawes, like, we keep questioning, oh, is the knockout the real thing? You know, and then he does it again. I just think that Phil Hawes right now is, it's his time. He's been doing this for a while. We've heard a lot of good things about him. And, you know, for me right now, I think it's a close fight. The odds are exactly where they should be for how green they both are in their UFC careers. There's just something about Hawes. I think there's an it factor there that we still haven't seen him peak. And obviously, as we talk about when he gets these fast knockouts, it's hard to really judge the overall skill, but I think we're going to see that in this one. I don't think it's going to be a fast knockout. So we're going to get a really good picture painted here, and I'm going to lean towards Hawes.
Ken Flo, I'm a little distracted because we have an odds ticker now on our show on the video side. If you're listening exclusively, I apologize, but if you check out the YouTube channel for the Anakin Florian podcast, Cody Merrow built a fucking odds ticker for the main event challenge. So I'm a little bit excited. I'm fucking dancing on video right now. Odds ticker. Ken Flo, Nassourdine Imavov, Phil Hawes, -110, both ways. Which way for you?
Dude, you know, I truly believe that whoever wins this fight, that, you know, an excellent prospect will emerge. I like both of these guys. I think Imavov is an excellent striker. The way he moves, the way he picks his shots, he's clean, he's smart, and I think a little bit more sophisticated striking-wise, but Hawes has more power, and I also like the fact that he does have that wrestling background that he could lean on. I do think he needs to use that in his fight. If he relies on his wrestling background and uses his striking to more set up his wrestling, I think he can win this fight. I like Hawes here, but I tell you what, don't sleep on Imavov. Both these guys are excellent prospects, but I think Hawes is kind of coming into his own now. So let's go with Phil.
I love saying that name, Phil Hawes. I mean, imagine if there was a UFC fighter with the last name Hawes. Ian, you know, I love that word, Hawes. Yeah. Tucker Hawes or some shit. Fucking Hoss knocking him out. All right, heavyweight. Big night for the heavyweights, Ian. Chris Daukaus favored at a minus 175 clip to go to 3-0 in the UFC. He takes on Alexei Oleinik, who is plus 155. Alexei Oleinik, born nearly 1 month to the day after our guy Ken Flo in the year 1976. 59 professional mixed martial arts wins per Tapology for Alexei Oleinik. Ian Parker, what do you think? Oleinik plus 155. Chris Daukaus out of Philadelphia, minus 175. Who do you have?
Kenny, you look so much younger than Alexei Oleinik. Don't sweat it. You look great. Better hairline, better looking. You're good, bro. Look, this one is a – I think this is should be a lot closer in the odds that it says. I know Daukaus has gotten a couple of good wins when he was an underdog, I think, in both fights. But there's something about Alexei Oleinik in these type of situations that just makes me want to take a shot on him. You know, when we don't expect him to strike, you know, he comes forward, throws hooks, and he connects. And then if it goes to the ground, you know where the advantage is going to be. He's still as strong as an ox. I think this is an interesting step up in competition for Daukaus, especially when Oleinik was fighting a lot of top guys within the last year. Like a real, I don't want to say drop in competition, but definitely a difference where people are in their careers. I'm going to take a shot on the underdog here. I'm going to go with Alexei Oleinik.
All right, Kenflo, what do you think? Daukaus, Oleinik.
You know, Oleinik continues to get better. I think he's been in tremendous shape for a little while, but I do think that Daukaus is the better fighter, especially on the feet. He has a decent background in grappling as well, where I don't think Oleinik is just going to walk through him if the fight goes to the ground either. And Daukaus is kind of sneaky athletic. You look at him, you're like, oh, this guy, I don't know. But he moves extremely well. He's got sharp hands. I think he can win this one. He might be able to finish Oleinik as well. Daukaus is someone to watch. Don't sleep on him. I like Daukaus here.
Good stuff. I don't disagree with a lot of that. I certainly believe Daukaus deserves the distinction as the favorite. I know some of our listeners immediately were chiming in on online saying, man, give me that boa constrictor at plus 155. All right, we'll see. I like the dissension. All right, at featherweight, we'll have Kenflo lead this one, if you don't mind, my man. Charles Rosa, minus 170. Derek Minner, plus 150. So a little background for you, Flo. It took Derek Minner 34 pro fights to get to the UFC. He gets Grant Dawson in the debut, which was probably short notice. But then he upsets TJ Laramie with a great finish in his second UFC appearance. Rosa, on the other hand, finally healthy and a good competing schedule. He's had a lot of injuries, a neck injury, but he fought twice last year. What do you think about Rosa here as the favorite against Derek Minner?
You know, I love Rosa's fighting spirit. He loves to move forward, push the fight on whoever he faces. Hasn't found a lot of success lately. And seems like he's a little bit scrambled as far as, you know, what he wants to do on the ground. He understands that he wants to go for the submission, but I think positionally his game has suffered a little bit. I think on the ground, this should be a pretty competitive fight. I think Minner's not bad there either, and also kind of has this very, very similar style where maybe positionally he might not be you know, at such a high level, but submission wise, he has some great submissions. So I do think Derek is probably the better striker, moves a little bit better and can pose some problems there for Rosa. But I don't know. You know, I think if Rosa is healthy, he definitely could win the fight and out position Minner. But these guys are very evenly matched. It's a great matchup. I think I'm leaning towards Minner here.
I agree with that, Kenny. Not that I agree with the prediction per se, but I agree with the analysis and the betting line. So I write down what I think the line is going to be before this exercise. And I had that as a pick 'em fight. So I can understand why you see value on Derek Minner at plus 150. Ian, we'll spin it to you now. So for Charles Rosa, he's alternated wins and losses through eight UFC appearances, going for his first UFC winning streak here. What do you think about this one at 145 pounds?
I think Kenny nailed that. You know, Charles Rosa, I think, is his own worst enemy. I think he's very confused with his fight style. You got a guy who wants to strike, then he gets to the ground, and sometimes he just gets way too comfortable on his back. And he kind of focuses on one submission, even if it's failing, almost as if he's able to hold the guy down long enough to get him tired and try and land that one submission. And in a three-round fight, you just don't get enough time for that. And a guy like Minner, we just saw him go against a really strong grappler in Laramie. He was a huge underdog. Everyone thought he was going to get, you know, destroyed or grinded out, and he came out the winner by a finish. So, yeah, I'm actually surprised at these odds. I think the reason why these odds are the way they are is because Rosa has just fought longer in the UFC, has fought higher-level competition. But I think the odds are way off here, and I think the value is absolutely on Minner. So I'm going to side with Kenny on this one and take the underdog as well.
Sounds like the Anakin Florian podcast might move that betting number by the end of the week. Maybe not.
Maybe
not. Co-main event, Ketlin Vieta, -260 versus Yana Kunitskaya, +220. And we'll need the round, the method, all that stuff. Ketlin Vieta is a very good fighter. I watched a little film this morning. I'm lying. I didn't do that, but I did do some research. Ha! She's 11-1, though. I did watch a tiny bit, but then I got distracted. Number 6 in the world, Yana Kunitskaya is right behind her at number 7. So divisionally, I think this is a very relevant fight, and I'm excited to see them get the co-main event shine, because if you look at this division underneath Amanda Nunes, Aspen Ladd and Juliana Pena are on winning streaks and haven't fought Nunes. Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy also on winning streaks, but they have fought her. And whoever wins this one is going to be someone who hasn't fought her and is theoretically in the mix. Ian Parker, Kunitskaya +220 or Vieta -260 for you?
I think the line's a little absurd here. I think it's way too distant for the level of these two. But I understand kind of why the style of Kunitskaya, did I say it right? She's more of a clinch fighter. She likes to hold you against the cage and use her knees and out-muscle you. And against Ketlin, I don't see that really happening. She's one of the bigger, stronger girls in the division as well. I think we've seen her power and her striking. Her jiu-jitsu game will be better. But getting Yana to the ground is also not that easy. In a straight bet, it's too much to lay in this fight. I would say take the over if the odds aren't too much further off on a betting standpoint. In a straight pick, though, I think Ketlin Vieta, however you pronounce the name, we know I'm so good at those. I would lean towards her. She's just got more tools in the toolbox. She's got more weapons to win this. I think she will have more output with her strikes. I think she'll be able to press forward a little bit more. And as long as she doesn't get held against the cage,
yeah,
I think it's her fight to win.
All right, seems like Ian, though, does like the over 2.5 rounds if forced to make a bet on that fight. And I'll give you props for pronouncing Kunitskaya, because, Ken, a lot of the Americans respect to you, but they want to go Kunitskaya. They always want to go Kunitskaya. Right. Yana Kunitskaya +220, huge fight for her. What do you think about the co-main event, Kip?
This is a tough matchup for Kunitskaya. I think that, you know, she likes to do most of her work in the clinch. I don't think she's going to be able to bully someone like Vieira in there. I think she, you know, can hang out there and land some strikes, but Vieira is pretty powerful and knows how to grapple as well. I like Vieira here. I think she's a little bit better everywhere.
All right, main event, Ian, we will lead with you. Curtis Blaydes, -380. Derek the Black Beast Lewis, +315 or so. A lot of different prices out there, depending on where you're placing your wagers. So these guys have combined to win their last 7. A lot of momentum on both sides. Blaydes 4 in a row, the Black Beast 3 in a row. There was a positive COVID test that took this fight away, so delayed 2.5 months, not November, but February. Huge fight at heavyweight, Ian. Who do you like in the main event, and how do they get it done?
Yeah, you know, I like Curtis Blaydes here. I hate to think that Derek Lewis at this point in his career, the takedown defense hasn't gotten any better. It has, but we saw in Curtis Blaydes versus Volkov that he just doesn't stop, and he's got the cardio in him to do that for 5 rounds. And I don't think Derek Lewis does. Now, Derek can land that punch at any moment and the person dies. Like, it's just, he's got that power. There's no question. The dude's got it. His ground game getting up from being taken down way better. We've definitely seen him become the best white belt or whatever he calls himself in Texas. You know, he's definitely worked on his craft. As much as he's a jokester and he likes to have fun on social media, he takes this seriously. I just think Curtis Blaydes is going to be too fast, the more athletic guy. And with wrestling in your back pocket, especially as a heavyweight, and be able to grapple the way he is able to grapple for that long while having a good striking game, I just think Curtis Blaydes wins this fight. I can't think Derek Lewis is going 5 rounds again, unless it's another Francis, you know, no punching fight. That's not going to happen. I think Curtis Blaydes wins this. I'm going to say third round TKO.
Third round TKO for Curtis Blaydes is the pick to click for Ian Parker. Kenny, Curtis Blaydes gets a lot of respect from the odds makers and professional bettors, right? Because he cashes unless he fights Francis Ngannou. He's getting a lot of respect here. -380, I think, is prohibitive for a lot of bettors like me who are betting $50 a game. You know, it's a huge price. I don't know if I'm asking you if he deserves it or not, but how do you see this main event playing out? And ultimately, we will need a winner.
You know, in general, and maybe I'm biased, but I do think this is true, that It takes way longer to get good at grappling as far as, you know, the sensitivity and the timing, all the repetitions and all the different positions that you need to be able to be good at. You know, wrestling and jiu-jitsu is always going to take a long time for anybody. So I think that's why we're seeing that big disparity. Blades has been wrestling a long time. I don't see him as a huge submission threat necessarily, but I do think he could outposition Derek Lewis and then utilize that nasty grounded pound that he has. So that's the way I see it going down. Absolutely, as Ian said, Derek Lewis can end a fight in an instant. Talk about a guy who is sneaky fast and sneaky athletic. He could surprise a lot of good heavyweights out there. I just don't see it happening against someone like Blades. I see a second round TKO for Mr. Blades.
All right, both guys like the favorite, Curtis Razor Blades. On Twitter, you can find Ian Parker at Ian Parker MMA. IP, before we let you go, our poll question for the show today. If you had to pick one active welterweight to beat Kamaru Usman, to save a hamster's life or otherwise, who has the best chance to do it? Is it Covington? Is it Leon Edwards? Masvidal? Gilbert Burns? Stephen Wonderboy Thompson? Or somebody else that I am not mentioning? If you got to send one active guy in there to beat Usman, who do you like?
Process of elimination. It's not Burns. Leon Edwards, haven't seen him fight in a really long time. I don't know how he bounces back from this layoff. I think he's a great fighter. We need to see him fight. That's not his fault. Just, I got to see the guy compete. We know Colby Covington is uber competitive. We saw that. You know, I don't know if he's gotten so better. How do I explain this? Is he gotten that much better compared to what Usman's done since? Because what we just saw to Kamaru Usman was a different level than what he was before that. And what we saw Colby against Woodley was Colby being Colby. You know, I know it's kind of weird to like say, but the style didn't change much. And I think against Tyron Woodley, it's not the same Woodley we think. I'm going to be a little different here. Although I think Covington is the easiest pick to choose based on, I'm going to say Stephen Wonderboy Thompson here. And this is why he doesn't get knocked out except for Anthony Pettis in that one shot where he was dominating. I think his style is the one that can keep the distance, use that range and be a very bizarre striker for Usman. You know, he's also very hard to get taken down. And, you know, for me, it's just styles make fights, you know, and I think for everyone, it's the same thing. And I think his style also, he has not fought Usman yet.
Well, right. And that's an intriguing part of the whole equation.
Yeah. You know, do I think he's the best wrestler? Do I think cardio? I mean, listen, cardio, he's phenomenal. Does he have the same output as Colby Covington? No, but we saw Usman get pressured very hardcore by Gilbert Burns. That was similar to what Colby Covington does. And Usman took a shot, fell, got up, handled it, came back and finished the fight as if nothing happened. He made the adjustments. I just think this different of a style and not being taken down so easily, I think Wonderboy can cause some problems.
And again, Ken Flo, Bilal Muhammad, Ray Longo, and Ian Parker, all hamster lovers, and all of them looking long and hard at Stephen Wonderboy Thompson to be the guy best equipped now, skill-wise, to beat Kamaru Usman, more or less. I mean, I think there was some Covington love in there as well, but very interesting stuff. All right, Ian, good stuff. We'll talk to you next Monday, if not sooner, via text, buddy. Thanks for the time.
You got it, guys.
All right, that's it for the main event challenge this week, and that's going to do it for the program. Coming to you from this StreamYard platform today. Hope you liked it, but we got a lot of things planned. This platform allows us to do Q&As and things that bring you in at a more live capacity. And my background is in live radio, in which we had a bank of calls. Sometimes they weren't always lit up, but taking phone calls, that's very interesting to me to potentially be able to have some sort of back and forth, not unlike, you know, the old MMA live chat that we had on ESPN.com. So good stuff today. A couple programming notes. Remember the show with Bilal Muhammad coming up Thursday on this very channel. Also check out Ken Flo's new YouTube channel as well for more jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts, grappling content, all sorts of stuff there. Merchandise at AnakFlorianPodcast.com. Promo codes and everything else if you want to get gear for Anik and Florian or Remember the Show or FNA or any of that stuff. Thank you to our executive producer, Cody Merrill, for putting it all together, our guests, Longo Parker, and of course, Bilal Muhammad. Congrats to Usman and everybody else. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Appreciate you watching, listening. Until next week, don't text and drive, but live.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.